This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. All across the country that takes far too many pills. And now a major hospital in a major American city has said enough pills, particularly pills that may not actually be doing anything. The hospital is Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. That's where Dr. Paul Offit is chairman of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center. Paul was on the show with me back in July when he published a book called Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. And because this decision happened at his hospital, I've asked him to join me here today to talk about it. Hi, Paul. Welcome back. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Thank you. I'm sorry I missed you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Tell me about this decision your hospital has made about supplements.
Well, it's hard to trust them. You only have to pick up the paper, and every 2 weeks you find out that there are supplements that are found to not contain in the bottle what it says that they contain on the label. You know, we take care of a vulnerable population of hospitalized children, and now what we do is we've set a standard, which is to say we're not going to put any supplement on our formulary unless it's been clearly shown to be manufactured under so-called good manufacturing practices, and it's clear we get something called a certificate of analysis where the company says that what's on the label is what's in the bottle. So as a consequence, that we have vitamins on our formulary, we have some amino acids on our formulary, but only really 4 or 5 supplements do we really have on the formula.
Now, when we talk about supplements, these are dietary supplements?
Right. So things, what people would know it is, for example, melatonin or echinacea or St. John's wort, those are typically considered dietary supplements.
That is part of an industry in this country, Paul, that makes something like $22 billion a year, maybe even $25 billion a year. And you're telling me that they're not regulated?
That's right. From the standpoint of the Food and Drug Administration, they are virtually unregulated and have been really since the 1994 Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. So, you know, it says on the label, it's not always what's in the bottle. And we can't take that chance at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
When you say that you're not having them at the hospital, does that mean that the pharmacy will not carry it anymore? Were these things being dispensed?
Yes, that's right. To some extent, they were being dispensed. What we do now is that when someone comes in, for example, and they bring in a product that their doctor wants them to get or their friend wants them to take, we try and discourage it. If parents still want to get it, what we do is we ask them to sign a waiver that basically educates them that what they think about the safety of the product or the efficacy of the product or what's actually in the product may not be true. So it's a chance to educate the parents, a chance to educate our health staff to some extent.
Well, I was going to ask you about the staff. I'm sure that you have doctors on the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia staff who are telling people, you know what, you should take melatonin, you should take chondroitin, you should take glucosamine, you should take whatever these other supplements are, ginkgo biloba, et cetera. These are the sort of things we're talking about, right?
Exactly. And I think what it enables us to do is to sit down then with those physicians and to go through the data to see whether or not there really are data to support that something works as they would like it to work, or that something is safe as they would like to be safe, but more importantly, whether it actually is what it's claimed to be. And, you know, these products often come up short in those areas.
How did these things start being prescribed by doctors in your hospital and elsewhere in the first place if there's no evidence that they work?
Well, the thing is, they're not prescribed. They're recommended. And, you know, pharmaceutical company products are prescribed at some level, which is to say you need a prescription to get them. These you can get just by walking into pretty much any health food store. And I think that's what makes them so attractive. People feel that this is their medicine. You know, it's all natural. It's all organic. It can't possibly hurt them. This industry lives under this kind of untouchable halo.
So my question then is, how did it end up in the hospital's pharmacy in the first place?
Well, there are some things, for example, that are of value. I mean, there are certain probiotics, for example, that have been shown to help people who have antibiotic-resistant diarrhea. There are melatonin, for example. There are good data that can affect sleep cycles. There are children who have something called pyridoxine deficiency, which can cause seizures. You know, we can get a supplement called pyridoxal 5-phosphate that's manufactured well. So there are some supplements, you know, that aren't available as prescriptions, but that are of value. But frankly, they are few and far between and not nearly what's claimed by this industry.
When you and I talked this summer, when your book, Do You Believe in Magic, came out, one of the things I asked you about was people who are using these things because they are very, very sick. And particularly when it comes to fixing up kids who are sick, who have chronic diseases, their parents you know, obviously can get frustrated and worried about their kids as the child isn't getting healthier or maybe even getting sicker. Are they the ones who are trying to turn to anything that they think might help? Is that what's causing a lot of these supplements to end up in the mouths of these kids?
Yes, that's exactly right. So, I mean, medicine has limits. And for certain cancers, for example, therapies that are available are woeful. And I think parents often turn to this industry and to those who promote this industry for a magic cure. For the most part, when things don't hurt, I think that's fine. But sometimes they can hurt. And that's where I think we like to think in our hospital, we prohibit that kind of usage.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, because I'm curious, what is the danger in these things?
Well, so for example, we'll have a child that we have a huge transplant service, both bone marrow transplant and solid organ transplants like lung and liver and heart. You know, sometimes parents will give a child St. John's wort because they feel that it helps, for example, with depression. And you know, what happens with St. John's wort is it's metabolized through the liver, as are immunosuppressive drugs. So what'll happen is a child will be unknown to us be taking St. John's wort because the parent's giving to them, and that causes the immunosuppressive drugs not to work, and they reject the transplant. When the child comes in, the residents will always say, what medicines is he on? But sometimes the parents don't consider these products to be medicines, and when they are, because they can have a physiological or pharmacological effect.
So there's another message for any parents listening today who have kids who may have to take them to a doctor or a hospital. When you're filling out that form and ask what drugs does your kid take, tell them everything.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Now, what does this say about just the business of vitamins? You know, is there use in giving your kid a Flintstones vitamin, for instance?
I think, for example, children babies who are exclusively or partially breastfed definitely benefit from vitamin D early in life. That's true. But beyond that, no. I think multivitamins don't hurt you. Multivitamins are basically at or about the recommended daily allowance. But megavitamins can certainly hurt you. Megavitamins being fivefold, tenfold, twentyfold greater than the amount that's recommended. I mean, those data are pretty clear. There are more than 20 studies now that have shown that if you take large quantities of vitamins, vastly in excess of the recommended daily allowance, you actually increase your risk of cancer and increase your risk of heart disease. I think most people don't know about those studies, which is too bad because they're certainly reproducible and out there.
And that's not children we're talking about, but adults as well.
That is adults. So adults who, for example, consider themselves at higher risk of cancer because they've been exposed to asbestos or because they smoke, certainly are at higher risk of cancer when they take this, and as are, frankly, just otherwise healthy adults. There's no reason to take large quantities of excess vitamins, none. And when we don't give this a second thought. When we have a cold, you know, we'll pop 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C without thinking about that. That's, you'd have to eat 8 cantaloupes to get that quantity, and, you know, maybe we're not supposed to eat 8 cantaloupes. You know, you sort of bypass your satiety level, which I think is an unnatural thing to do.
Why are these allowed to be sold?
Because it's unregulated. You know, it's a powerful industry. In 1994, they got behind something called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHEA, which basically neutered the Food and Drug Administration. I think it's not to the consumer's advantage, and it's not going to change until the consumer steps up and says, this is a problem. I mean, if you look at the data, I think it is clear that large quantities of vitamin E in excess of the recommended daily allowance absolutely increases one's risk of prostate cancer, but most people don't know that. When you buy a vitamin E preparation, typically, for example, at a health food store, it says 3,333% of the recommended daily allowance. That's 33 times the recommended daily allowance. In this one little brown gel cap, you would have to eat 1,700 almonds, which is an excellent source of vitamin E, to get the same amount as in that little gel cap. Not a natural thing to do. And if you look on the label, it doesn't say that it increases your risk of prostate cancer because it's an unregulated industry. It really, the consumer doesn't benefit. They think they're benefiting, but they're not.
Are other hospitals following your lead here, Paul?
I hope so. I mean, there's certainly been talk that that's true. I think it was a bold move on our part, but it was a move in defense of the vulnerable population that we have in our hospitals. We do this for the children because we are responsible for their safety. And this is, I just feel like we've been participating at some level in a little bit of fraud here. You know, there's these products, sometimes when it says 200 micrograms of selenium on the label. It could be 40,800 micrograms of selenium because the industry is unregulated, and that's happened.
We need more people with your common sense in hospitals making decisions like this. Dr. Paul Offit, chairman of the hospital's Therapeutic Standards Committee and its Division of Infectious Diseases and its Vaccine Education Center, all at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. His book is a great read. It's called Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
This is America Weekend.